Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Sanhedrin Chav Dalet. We are holding at Gufa, which is 11 lines off the top. Gufa, let's go back and review what Rish Lakish told us yesterday. He was responding to an unusual, so to speak, halacha presented by Rav Meir, that one has the ability to discredit his opponent's witnesses. He can claim them to be disqualified, pasul. And Rish Lakish was surprised upon hearing this halacha. Gufa Amar Rish Lakish, he responds by saying, Pe Kaddish, how could Rav Meir, with such a holy mouth? So actually it was a very respectful way of referring to him. How can he even say such a thing? How could it be possible that he voices such a position? So because of that, we revised it. We actually fixed it up. That Rameir was referring to a single witness. So if his opponent brings along merely one witness, which is typically not sufficient to bring, you know, to solidify a case, right? It's just that he was okay. You know, Reuven was okay with Shimon bringing that one aid, so you can discredit him, as we learned yesterday. Okay. In any case, we're going to focus on the terminology, on the phraseology that Rish Lakish refers to Rav Meir as Pe Kaddish in a very respectful way. He wasn't coming down on him. He wasn't speaking down. He was speaking very highly of him. What a great man! How could it be possible that he, right? Aini, is that so? That Rish Lakish would express himself in such a soft, respectful way? V'amar Ula says, Ha'irei is Rish Lakish, Beis HaMedrash. You ever got to see Rish Lakish in action, so to speak, at the Beis HaMedrash? He was sharp, he was direct. Kilu ha'iker harim v'teuchlan zebezeh. It's like one who has two mountains in his hands and grinds them into each other. Says Rashi, Alma Harifa Tuvahava. He was known to be sharp, and why would he? So it's kind of out of character that he would call Rameir Derech Anova Per Kadosh. It wasn't his motive. It wasn't his style, right? Amar Ravina. So Ravina responds, well, what's the big deal? Rameir was even more sharp than him. Amar Ravina Valikol Horeya Habeis Rameir Beis Hamedrash. Imagine seeing Rameir in the Beis Hamedrash. He was super sharp. Kilu Haikir Hari Harim V'Toichen and Zevazet. It's like he's taking double mountain, double decker mountains, and grinding them with each other. So Rameir was on an even higher plane in terms of his strength and his sharpness and directness. So yeah, so it makes sense that Rish Lakish would sort of, look up to him that way, because he was even on the sharpness track, Rameir was superior than him. So he certainly had respect for him, and he certainly related to him with great covet. So what's the problem? What's the kasha on the way Rish Lakish refers to Rameir? It makes sense. Answers the Gemara, just the opposite. We're not asking. We fully understood, and we were actually impressed. What we meant to say is like this. Take a look at how the people in Eretz Yisrael, Rish Lakish was a resident of Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that he was charif, v'chakim tuva, says Rashi. Very deep, very wise, very sharp. Notwithstanding his own status, he would hold Rameir in very high regard, and he was very dear to him. Rashi says, he was trying to reconcile Rameir's shita. He wasn't putting it down. He wasn't negating it. It's the opposite. He was trying to build it up. He was trying to make it work. As we find in a similar story, where Rebbe was sitting and teaching that asr lahatmin es atzoinin. Not only may one not insulate something in some hot material, you can't insulate a hot dish, hot food on Shabbos for concern that you might use coals, whatever. So likewise, says Rebbe, we extend it even to cold material. You have a cold drink, you want to insulate it to keep it cold, you can't do that because it could lead to doing it in hot. Amar l'fanav Rav Shmuel Rav Yosi, said Rav Shmuel, the son of Rav Yosi, responds to Rebbe, Abba, my own father, Rav Yosi, was a great man. He threw l'hatman and said, he allowed hatman of something cold. It was okay. He was okay with that. Amar l'fanav, said Rebbe, took a 180 and he says, okay, I submit to that. Amar l'fanav Hira Zaken, the great elder, the great Chacham Rav Yosi, he already issued his psak. I'm going to, you know, fall in line with that. So you see how respectful they were to each other. Look, because Amar Papa, Boy Ray, come take a look. Take a close look. Kama Machavin Zeze. Look how much respect they have for each other. They submit to each other. Look, the Ilu Rabbi Yosi Kaim. Because Rabbi, you would think, was greater, was a Nasi, right? And in fact, if Rabbi Yosi would have still been alive at that point, he would be sitting, bent over in front of Rabbi as a Talmud, because Rabbi was the Nasi, was a great leader. How do we know that it is so, that it would be so, that it would have been so? The Har Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yosi, was Memalei Makom Avos of Hava. He took the place of his father in all regards. Rashi says, Choshev Kavod. He had all those milos of his father, vayakafif vayoshev fnei Rebbe, and he submitted himself to Rebbe, like a talmud to a Rebbe. Right. So, despite the fact that Rabbi Yosi considered himself lower than Rebbe, Omar, despite that fact, so when Rebbe was presented with something from Rabbi Yosi, right, my father said, my father Rabbi Yosi allowed this, he stopped in his tracks. Amar kvar hira zaken, that's it. It's been ruled upon by the zaken. I am backing off. So you see how much kavod they have for each other. It's not about titles and statuses. It's about camaraderie and chavivas for Torah, for talmid chachamim. Tremendous respect they had for each other. Amar Rabbi Yosi, ma'idich siv. How do we explain it? Pasuk. This is in Zechariah, actually. Ve'ekach lishnei makleis, I had these two sticks. Le'echad karosi noyam. The one, I gave the name noyam, pleasantness. Le'echad karosi chayvim. The other one, harshness. You use it to hit and to, right? So, there's some deeper meaning here, referring to different styles of learning. The word noyam refers to the Talmid HaChamim in Eretz Yisrael. Elu Talmid HaChamim in Eretz Yisrael Shaman Imen. They're pleasant with each other when it comes to their learning. There's a camaraderie. There's an easygoingness between them. Shaman Imen Zil Zeb HaLoch Chayvlim. On the other hand, the Chayvlim, which is a harsh term, there's challenge. There's challenging. There's directness. There's that contention, so to speak. Elu Talmid HaChacham Shebabel. That refers to the other style of learning in Babel. Shemechabim Zel Zeh BaHalacha. They confront each other with harshness in matters of learning and halacha. Different style of learning. Furthermore, we have a pasuk in Zechariah again. Vayomer Elu Shnei Bnei Yitzhar Hayomdim Shnei Zeisim Maleha. So he refers to Yitzhar, which is olive oil, and Shnei Zeisim are the olives themselves. Again, this refers to two types, two styles of learning, in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So Yitzhar, that's the pleasant oil. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Elu Talmid HaChacham Shebe'eretz Yisrael, Shanoichen. Once again, Shanoichen Zel Zeh BaHalacha, they're easygoing with each other. And Rashi explains, they join together in camaraderie to help each other out, to explain things, and come to the conclusion together. So that's the way they do it. Keshem and Zayis, like olive oil. Ushnayim zeisim aleo. The two olives that he saw. So the actual olive itself is not very pleasant. It's actually bitter. Elu talmid chachamim shebabel. These are the talmid chachamim of Babel shemerurin zelazeh. Bahalacha kezayis. There's a certain bitterness, a certain competition, if you will, in matters of Torah, of course, l'shem shemayim, but a different style, a more contentious direct, you know, excited way of learning, like Isaias. Now, Isaias here is referring to the Isaias tree, the leaves, Isaias leaves, which are bitter, or according to the Ben Yoyada, actually the olive itself begins as mar, it's a bit, has a bit of bitterness, and then when it's pickled or ground, it turns into something sweeter. So he says that the Talmid Chachamim and Bavel, they appear like they're opposing each other, like they're disliking each other because of that, you know, excited, contentious debate that goes on between them. But ultimately, v'seifam oyhavim, there is tremendous love between them. Of course, it's all about Torah. It's all about loving each other and loving Hashem. Okay, now we have a pasuk in Zechariah again. V'asa einai, so I picked up my eyes and I see v'era, interesting vision. V'hinei shtayim nashim yoytzeis, I see two women leaving. V'ruach b'chanfeyim, just like spirit, just like air in their wings. Olehenu k'nafayim k'nafay chasida, right? And they appear like this chasida bird. V'tisena ha'efa, v'tisena ha'efa. So Efa ben Aretz ben Hashemayim, Hashemayim ben Aretz. Interesting, different nusach than the actual pasuk. Va'aymar el ha'malach ha'dover bi. I turn to the malach who's speaking to me. Anahim ha'melichas es ha'efa. Where they taking this container, this Efa? Va'aymar, he tells me, Livnoi slo bayis beretz Shinar. She's going to build herself a house in Shinar, which is Bavel, of course. What's the message here? What did he see? What are they doing? Zuchanufa v'gasus haruach. What he saw was forces of flattery. Two evil forces. The power of flattery and the spiritual, you know, manifestation of these things. So malachim or whatever that manifest these ideas. Vigasa ruach and haughtiness. So these two midas, these two character traits, were being moved to Bavel. Shiardul Bavel. That's what he saw. And Bavel, you can find an abundance of these things. Ask the Gemara, really? Vigasa ruach l'Bavel nachas? Did Bavel merit to have this great measure of haughtiness? Really? That's where it's stationed. V'amar mar, we learned back in, I think it's Maseches Kedushin. Asura kaben gasus yordel oilam. There are 10 measures of haughtiness that descended on the world. So it's like a mashal, but basically, a certain amount of this element is here, right? And the vast majority ended up in a place called Elam. Elam tisha, 9/10 ended up in Elam, not la'elam. So that's where it's stationed. Va'achas kolam kula, and the rest, 10% ended up being dispersed throughout the world. So Elam took a great measure, a big portion, lion's share of the Gasus Aruch. And here we're saying that it ended up in Bavel. Says the Gemara, both are true. Incorrect. L'Bavel Nachas, initially, it was exported to Bavel. But it didn't last there. It ended up being exported further, being transferred to Elam. V'shtravruvei hu'deshtravar. It ended up rolling over and being transferred l'Elam, to the place called Elam. De'ekonami dechsev livnois ba. La. Approve it from the pasuk itself. That only one of the two malachim, or these forces, these women who represented these midais, ended up in Bavel. They both started in Bavel, but only one ended up there permanently. The other one ended up in Elam. Because the pasuk says, Libnois loh bayis beretz Shinar, to build herself a home. Singular. Only one ended up in Shinar. Shmamina, that proves our point that the second one was exported to Elam. Asks the Gemara, how could that be true? Va'amar, we learned that simun legasus ruach anius, poverty is synonymous with haughtiness. A person has nothing, you know, to say for himself, then he's haughty, right? And the fact is, vanius, where do we find a great share of where is a poverty prevalent? Lebavel nachas, it ended up in Bavel. Now, if poverty is synonymous with haughtiness, then logic would dictate that Bavel would house both things, would house haughtiness as well. Answers the Gemara, no, we're not speaking about physical poverty, financial poverty, material poverty. My anius, when we speak about poverty being synonymous with gava, anius Torah, people that are empty of Torah, intellectual poverty. So those people have to promote themselves and substitute for their content, for their lack of content, with expressions of haughtiness. Tichsiv, as we have a pasuk, Achois lonuktana, so in Elam, Torah was lacking. Achois lonuktana, v'shadayim ein lo. What does that mean? Amar b'yechon zu Elam, it's referring to this town Elam, where Daniel lived. Shazasa lilmot, although there was zeicha to learn, so it's a reference to the leader specifically, so Daniel was a great learned man, but he didn't teach, he didn't invest much in teaching Torah, in spreading Torah. The place was not zeicha to teach and to disseminate Torah, as opposed to Babel, says Rashi, where Ezra HaSeifer was stationed. And he promoted Torah, and he taught Torah like we had back in the Chaf Aleph. So that explains why Gasus found itself a comfortable place, parking spot in a permanent parking spot in Elam, a place which was bereft intellectually, spiritual, intellectual, and intellect. My Bavel. Okay, one last point. How did Bavel get its name? What does the word Bavel stand for in terms of, you know, in the context of our sugi, in the context of Torah learning? Amar b'yichanan b'lula, it's sort of a mix. B'mikra, b'lula b'mishnah, b'lula b'talmud, a mix between a bit of chumash, a bit of mishnayos, a bit of gemara, which pretty much is an accurate description. It personifies our Talmud Bavli, which is a healthy mix of all three elements. So that's how it gets its name, Bavel, on account of the Torah, Talmud Bavli, which was developed there. One last word, Machshakim Hibani Kimesi Oilam, is a pasuk in Eicha. Amar Yirmiya, interesting, Eicha was written by Yirmiya. Amar Yirmiya, Zeh Talmud Shel Bavel, it's a reference to the Talmud Bavli, and Rashi says, why is it referred to as Machshakim, darkness, She'ein Neichen Imzeh, because of that, you know, sort of tension amongst them, as we said before. V'talmudim sikbe biyadim, lots of unknowns and uncertainties, a lot of tekus and kashyas, and right, we leave off, you know, uncertain. So that characterizes Talmud Bavli, and that's why it's referred to as Machshakim. Of course, only if it's when it's dark and you turn darkness into light. That's the point of Talmud Bavli. Within the darkness, within the Machshakim, plow through the difficulties, overcome the hurdles, break through the darkness to create a tremendous light, which is our mission, which is our job. That's why we focus so much on Talmud Bavli. Continues the Mishnah. Okay, back to Sanhedrin and issues of Dinei Torah. Says the Mishnah, Amar Lo Neman Lo Abba. Reuven tells his good friend Shimon, you know what, we're having a Din Torah, but we're short one dayan. We have two, but we need three. We want to resolve this quickly. You know what? I'll have my father join the Bezn. Are you okay? Yeah, sure. Neman alai avich, oh, your father. Or neman alai shloisha rayi baka. You know, we'll take three shepherds. You know, just an example, meaning, you know, unlearned people. And let them decide for us. Let them litigate for us. So basically, he's committing to submit to somebody who's not really qualified. And then he had a change of heart. Can he go back on that or not? Can he backtrack from this commitment? Reb Meir says yes. Reb Meir Omer Yochel Elach Serboy. He isn't really obligated to follow through. Okay, he committed, and it's a change of mind. It's fine. V'chacham Omerim, too late. Eino Yochel Elach Serboy. He can't go back on that. So he has to follow through and accept their verdict. Another example of this type of halacha. Regarding a shvuah. Ha'yuchayiv l'chaber shvuah. So Reuben, let's say he was a Maida b'miktsas, he admitted, you know, partially to a claim, so that obligates him to swear. And swear a real shvuah, a shvuah min ha-Torah with Hashem's name, and he doesn't want to. So he says, you know what? What about if I just do a lighter shvuah, a less severe shvuah? I swear in my life, right? The other fellow says, you know what? I'll forego the stringent, you know, serious type of shvuah. Just do a basic shvuah in your life. Swear by your life. And then he says, you know what? Actually, I'm not happy with that. I'm not going to take that. I want a real one. Can he go back on his word? Rabbi Omer, sure he could. No, too late. Omer of Dimi Bidir of Nachman. Beit Rav Yosef. In the first case where he submitted to his father, or so the other guy's father, was speaking in the Kavle Lebechad. So even though he's just one of three, the other two were qualified Dayanim, still Rameir says he can be Chayzer Boy, he can go back on that. Amar Bidam HaShmuel, Machlekes Macholach. Now let's focus on the core Machlekes in the Mishnah, which is after committing verbally to submit to a certain process, Rameir says, so what? He decided he wants something more official, something more formal. He has a right to do that. Chachamim? No, too late. Says Rabbi Dimar Shmuel, Machlekes b'mocholoch. That's only when, let's say, Reuven had a $100 claim on Shimon. So Reuven claimed that money was coming to him from Shimon. So Reuven is the plaintiff, the Teveya. Shimon is the defendant, the Nitva. And what happened was Reuven committed to Shimon. We'll have our father, we'll have your father, right? And, okay, if you win, you win. And I'll be Meichel, my claim. Mochalach. So there's nobody actually paying out the money at this point. He's foregoing his claim based on the psak issued by these, you know, unqualified individuals. So in that case, the Rabbanan say, you know what, too late. Because we're speaking that the verdict was issued and that's it. The fellow is now exempt. He's potter. He won the case. Machlokes b'mochalach. Aval be'etan loch. But let's say it's the other way around. Shimon, who allegedly owed money to Reuven, promised Reuven, look, if I'm okay with this, ad hoc bezin, right? In fact, if they obligate me to pay, I'll pay. Be'etan loch, I'll pay it out based on their verdict. So in this case, divrei hakol, all agree, even the chacham agree, it's never too late to go back on that. Yochai lachshav boy. Because you only have a right to claim, to extract money with proper dayan. So in the first case, he was meichel, too late. Meichel is meichel. Right? So the other one is zeichel. By default, if I give up my claim, you're zeichel. But if it's a matter of paying out, as long as I didn't pay it out, nobody can force me to do so. So even the chacham agree, could be chayzer. That's Shmuel's opinion. Rabbi Yechon Omar, Rabbi Yechon disagrees. Be'etin lecha machlokes. Machlokes is by etin lecha. In the second case, where Shimon, who allegedly owed money to Reuven, promises he'll pay based on the psak of this bezdin. There, Rameir says, well, it's never too late to go back on your thing. And Chacham say it's done deal. So the question is, what happens according to Rabbi Yechon? In the case of Mocholoch, where it's the other way, where Reuven is foregoing his claim based on the on this unofficial procedure. Iboilo, be'etin lecha machlekes. Did Rabbi Yechon mean that the machlekes is only by etin lecha? And there, the Rabbanon hold, you can still backtrack until you pay it off. Avo b'mocholoch, but in the case where he's being meichel a claim based on this psak, they all agree, even Rabbanon agree, too late, you can't go back on it. Again, be'etin lecha machlekes. Machlekes is only when he's promising to pay based on this verdict. There, Rameir holds you can be chayzer until you pay it out. Aval b'machalach, but in the first case where he's foregoing his claim, where it's the plaintiff promising to the defendant, look, I'm going to forego my claim. Aval b'machalach. Divrei HaKol all agree, even Rameir would agree, ein yochalach, so why he can't go back on his word, because he was zeichah. Or you can say, Bein bezu machlekes. According to Rabbi Yechon, machlekes applies in both cases, whether it's about paying out, whether it's about being exempt. So Shema, we have a riot. Damar Rav explained the machlekes as well, and he said, Be'etn lachot. Machlekes is only where he promises to pay based on the psak. There, Rameir says he can go back on it. Avo b'machalach, but it's a matter of being meichel. Divrei HaKol, ein yochalach, so boy, all agree, once he gets the psak, it's done. Because the person was zeicha, the mechila was applied, and it's over. That's Rava's presentation. Machlokes is by etin lecha, by machal lecha, all agree it's too late. So we're going to try to derive from Rava in terms of what Rabbi Yechonon meant. The question was in Rabbi Yechonon, right? So we went over to Rava, and we say like this. Iyamas b'shleim b'etin lecha machlokes. So if Rabbi Yechonon also meant, just as Rava said, that the machlekes only applies to etan lecho. Ava b'mochal lecho deber akol eni yochal lechos boi, but by mechila, all agree it's done. Rabba damak Rabbi Yechon. If so, Rabba will be in line with Rabbi Yechon. So Rabbi Yechon and Rabba are pretty much on, exactly on the same track. Eloi amrus. But if we're going to take the other option that Rabbi Yechon meant, and in both situations, bein bezu or bein bezu machlekes, in both situations, whether it's etin lecho, whether it's machalach, right? There is still a machlekes. Between Rabbi Meir says you can go back on your commitment, and Rabbanan say no, it's a done deal. So now Rava, who says that the machlekes is only by etin lecho, but by machalach, all agree. Ein yachal achzer boy, come on, Rava, damar come on. Who's Rava going with? Right. So again, let's just go back again. We have Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel, who says machlekes is by machalach, but by etin lecho, look, as long as I didn't pay it out, all agree I can go back on it. Rabbi Yechon goes, no, machlekes is by etin lecho. There we say that according to Rabbi Meir, you can be chayzer. The question was, what does Rabbi Yechon hold by machalach? All agree it's done, or the same machlekes applies to you? Now Rava says, starts off with the same language as Rabbi Yechon, machlekes is by etin lecho. There Rabbi Meir says you can be chayzer until I pay it out. And he concludes that by machalacha, it's done. Because the psak came out, he was zeich and the money, mechila is chal. So we're thinking that Rava and Rabbi Yechon are synonymous. And that sheds light on Rabbi Yechon's opinion as well. No, says the Gemara, maybe Rava is a third track. Rava, Talmud of Sheikamar, maybe he's taking his own track. So we'll have three opinions, three ways to learn the Mishnah. Okay, so again, he committed to the procedure involving his father, etc. Rameir says he can go back on it. He can be chayzer, he can change his mind. Chacham say he can't. We'll have three approaches. Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon, and Rava. Shmuel says, machlek is only by machulacha, but by etin lecha, all agree, nah, it's not done yet, until he pays it out. Rabbi Yechon will say, perhaps, machlek applies to both cases. No difference between one and the other. Rava will say, machlek is only by etin lecho. But by machalecho, all agree, ein yochel achshabay. Okay, eisvei Rav Acha bar techlif l'Rav. Say a kasha to Rav, who just finished telling us that machlek is strictly by etin lecho. But by machalecho, that goes much easier. As soon as the verdict comes out, and the fellow is exempted by this bezin, it's a done deal. Mevakash, Eisvira tachlifa l'rav. Achava tachlifa l'rav. Hoichai l'chaver shvua. Let's proceed to the second part of the Mishnah. There was a shvua between them. Okay, v'arma lai, derli b'chayi roishcha. He says, you know what, let's skip the serious, you know, shvua. Do a plain shvua, okay? I'm okay with that. Then he changes his mind. He has a change of heart. He wants the real deal. Ramei amir yachal achsobai, he can change his mind. No, you can't. Done is done. Now, who's going to make the shvua to whom? There are two options. You can swear to exempt yourself. Right? So, again, in our case, where Reuven is claiming against Shimon, and Shimon owes him money. In some cases, Shimon will say, well, I swear that I'm potter to exempt myself. You have cases where Reuven has to swear to collect the money. Different cases discuss the Masechah Shvuos. So, who exactly was offering what to whom? My love, let's assume. Classic is to swear and exempt yourself. That's a classic case. So Shimon was meant to pay, was allegedly owing Reuven money, as per Reuven's claim, and Reuven turns to Shimon and says, you know what? Instead of making a real shvuah, I'm going to make a, you know, we'll do a lighter shvuah. I'm okay with that. So once that happens, it's like machalach. Because he's foregoing, so to speak, his claim. You swear like this, and you'll be okay. You go home exonerated. It's like the case of machalach. And still we find the machalachs in the Mishnah. But Rameir says you can still go back on it. It's inconsistent with your pshat, Rava. That by machalach, it's a done deal. Loi, says the Gemara, no, actually, we're not speaking about machalach. What happened was that Reuven, in certain cases, Rashi brings a sachar, a nigzal, a person who was robbed. You can make a shvua to collect. The shvua allows you to collect, and that's what happened here. Reuven was meant to swear to collect. and he was meant to make a proper shvuah. And Shimon says, you know what, just make any shvuah and I'll pay the money. So here it's a commitment to pay. Oh, and that explains why the Rabbanon say, why Rabbi Meir says you can go back on it, because he hadn't paid it yet. Asks the Gemara, well, according to this, so both scenarios in the Mishnah involve the same type of thing, where he's promising to pay. In the first case, he's promising to pay based on the verdict issued by this informal bezin. In the second case, he's promising to pay based on this informal shvuah that you're going to make. So it's pretty much a repetition, it's a duplication. Vatanale Reisha, we already discussed the same type of case in the Reisha. As is the word, there's a slight difference in the two cases, and there's a lesson in each one, unfound by the other one. Tana Toilo B'das Acherim. In the Reisha, he's pretty much hinging it on the opinion, on the action of others. I'm going to allow the Bezdin, comprised of my father, and to obligate me to pay. So there you can say, well, I didn't expect them to obligate me to pay. So I could very well understand why, according to our mayor, it wasn't a true, wholehearted commitment that he could be chayzer. Then we proceed to the next case, where he promises to pay based on his opponent's swearing to earn that money, right? The shvuah that he's going to make to collect from him. And there as well, Herbert says, you can backtrack on that. And there's a chiddush, a tzricha. Each one is necessary. Each one has a lesson. We only discussed the case of the Reisha, where he's allowing this ad hoc bezin to run the show. But how come our mayor, perhaps over there, our mayor says, he can go back on it. He can change his mind. Because he never really committed to go, you know, the full 9 yards. He didn't really seriously expect to pay the Omar, because he was thinking in his mind, Mi'emar, the Mezakile. Who says they're going to side with my opponent? Who says he's going to win? He's hoping, right? Shimon's hoping Reuben's not going to win and not going to get paid. So it's not really a true commitment. I can understand why we allow him to backtrack. But in the second case, where, I mean, Shimon knows that Reuben is going to pick up his offer big time. He's going to run with that shvuah. He's going to make a shvuah and collect his money from Shimon. Of course, no two ways about it. He wants his money. Perhaps the mayor in this case will get to Rabban. It's too late. Listen, you committed yourself. You know what was going to happen. And that's why we present the second case as well, to teach us even there. The mayor says, you know what? He didn't really mean it. He can go back on it. On the other hand, if you only discuss the second case of the Shvua, where there's more reason to believe that it's a true commitment, perhaps over there, Rabban say, it's a done deal. But in the case of the Bezdin, where he's hoping that the Bezdin will side with him, not with his opponent. Perhaps next Rabban will get to Rav Meir that he can backtrack on his commitment, because it's not really a true commitment. Tricha, that's why we discuss both cases. No difference between one and the other. Now comes a new question. At what point are we trying to backtrack? During deliberations or after the verdict was issued? Amar Reish Lakish Machlokes Lifnei Gmar Din. It's only before the Gmar Din. Right after the Dayanim heard their claims and they're deliberating and the verdict was not yet issued, at that point, Ramirez says, you know what? The process was not yet finished. He can backtrack on his commitment to his opponent. Aval achag ma'adin, but once the verdict was issued, it's a done deal. It's finished. Divra koil all agree, ein yochel achzor, but you can't go back on it. Rabbi Yechon Amar, no, l'achag ma'adin machlek, it's just the opposite. The only reason why the Chacham don't allow you to backtrack is because it's too late. Verdict was issued. Hivoylu. Lachar gemar din machlokes. This discussion, the Shita of the Rabbanim specifically, who say you cannot rescind your offer, it's only after the verdict was issued, it's too late. Aval lifnei gemar din, but before that, while still deliberating, while still within the process of din, perhaps Divrei HaKol all would agree, even the Rabbanan would concede that he could rescind his offer. Or perhaps, Bein Bezu Machlekes, whether it's before or after, we have the same discussion. Tashmai comes a Raya from Rava. Once again, that Marava. And Rava here is not interpreting the Mishnah. You see, in contrast to earlier, where Rava gave his own sort of interpretation to the Mishnah, and that's how we concluded that perhaps Rava is going on a third track. unrelated to Rav Yechanan or to Shmuel. Therefore, you cannot use Rava to reflect on Rav Yechanan. But here it's different, because Rava is simply issuing a psak, a halacha, which has to sort of fall in line with one of these two explanations, one of these two possibilities, just mentioned. Dama Rava, kibul olav karev a pasul. So, if he accepted upon himself, he says, okay, I'm going to go to the karev, to the pasul, as a dayan, right? If it's still pre-gmardin, you can rescind his offer. La'achag mardin, but after the verdict had been issued, too late. Ein yochal achzer bo, you can't undo it. And we assume, says Rashi, that Rav is paskening like the majority, like the Chachamim, not like Rav Meir, who typically say, once you offer, you can cancel the offer. Okay, so now, the second part of Rav is fully understood, where he says, after Gmar Din, it's too bad, it's too late. That fits very well with the Rabbanan's opinion, that you cannot rescind your offer. Now, the first part, but, where he says, if it's still early in the game, before Gmar Din, you can take it back. Where do the Chachamim say you can be Chayzer? Oh, apparently. The correct approach to the Machlegis is that once it's still before the Gmar Din, even the Rabbanan would agree to Rav Meir. It's still early in the game, you can take it back. You can rescind your offer, you can cancel the deal. Okay, the Gemara will spell it out for us. Yamas Bishlema. It all makes sense if you say, La'acha Gmar Din Machlegis. The dispute in the Mishnah, and specifically the Chachamim's opinion that you cannot cancel is only after the Gmar Din, Aval Lefnei Gmar Din, but it's still before the Gmar Din, Dibri HaKol Yachal Achzer, but all agree you can take it back. So, if that's what that's what Rav Yechanan meant when he said that only La'achag Gmar Din, but not. So Rava is fully consistent with Rav Yechanan, the Rava Damak Rav Yechanan. And of course, going according to the Rabbanan, Valid Rabbanan. Well, that typically you can't be Chayzer, but again, that's only limited to Achag Gmar Din. Eli Amris Bein Bezu Bein Bezu Machlekes. But if you go with the assumption that Rav Yechanan meant that the Machlekes applies in both events, pre-verdict and post-verdict, in both Rabbanan say the offer is still standing. So Rava, who says that if it's still early, you can go back on the deal, Damar Kaman, who's he following? Whose opinion is reflected in Rava's verdict? This allows us to conclude with certainty that La'achar Gmar Din Machlekes Shmamina, that in fact, that's what Rabbi Yechanan meant to say. That if it's after the Gmar Din, we have a Machlekes, Rabbanan say you can't go back on it, but as the Gears on the side adds, Aval Lefnei Gmar Din, but if it's still pre Gmar Din, Divrei HaKoel, it's universally accepted that Yochal Achzer, but you can go back on it. You can cancel the offer. Shalach Le Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chisda, he sent a question to Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov. Lamein Rabbeinu, please, Rabbi, teach us this very question. Lefnei Gmar Din Machlekes? Oy La'achag Gmar Din Machlekes? Where's the Machlekes focused on? Before or after the Gmar Din? Secondly, Vadocha Kedivrei Mi? We have a Machlekes. Which Shita do we accept? Shalach Le's response was clear and to the point. La'achag Gmar Din Machlekes? Vadocha Kedivrei Chachamim? Machlekes pertains only to after the verdict. When we follow the Chachamim, that is too late. Ravashi Omar, Ravashi had a different version of the question. Hachi Shalach Le, he sent him as follows. Regarding that first discussion, what's the issue? Is he offering to pay if he loses the case? Or is he offering to give up his claim? Who's speaking to whom? Be'etan lecha machlekes, ayibim machalach machlekes. V'alach gedebremi? And then the second question is, whose shita do we accept, Rav Meir or the Chachamim? Shalach Le, he responded to him on this. Be'etan lecha machlekes. Machlekes is in a case where he's offering to pay if he loses the case, right? It's the defendant who's making this offer. I'm allowing myself to be judged by such and such, and if I lose, I'll pay you. So, in this case, even in this case, you pass like the Chachamim, that once you make the offer, you can't cancel it. Besura Masnohochi, so in the town of Sura, they had the aforementioned version of events. Bimpu Pendisa, but in the other town, Masnohochi, they had a different version as follows. Umar Chanina, Bar Shlamia, Shochlin Berav Lishmuel. So, from the yeshiva of Rav, they sent the question to Shmuel. Lamdein Rabbeinu, please teach us. Lefnei Gmar Din V'konam Yodei Mai. Suppose it's still pre-judgment, pre-verdict, but the litigants made a deal amongst themselves with a Kenyan. So, yeah, it's still pre-Gmar Din, which typically would allow one to cancel his offer, but they made a Kenyan. Is that binding or not? Sholach Lohi responded, of course. Once you make a kinyan, it's a done deal. Ein la'achar kinyan klum. Okay, so let's just briefly summarize the sugya. So, they committed themselves to a din conducted by a relative. Okay, or in the case of the Yeshua, he committed to accept even a semi-Yeshua. Can he take back the offer? Rameir says yes. Chacham say no. Now, who's offering to whom? Is it a matter of absolving somebody or a matter of paying out? Okay, who's making the offer? Am I offering to absolve you or am I offering to pay you if I lose? Right? Is it the plaintiff offering the defendant or the other way around? We have Shmuel who says, Machlokes is by mocholach, by forgiving. But by etan lecha, it's a question of paying. All agree you can go back on that until you pay. Rabbi Yechon says Machlokes applies to both cases. Rabbi says only to the etan lecha, but by mochalach all agree once the psak is issued it's all over. According to the conclusion here, the machlokes is by etan lecha, and the halacha like the chachamim, so this is like rava, right? We explained why the Mishnah has to speak about the payment and the shvuah commitment. Each one has a chiddush. Now, are we speaking before verdict or after verdict? Rava says, Rabbi Paskins, Machlekes is only post-verdict, and the halacha is like the Chachamim, but otherwise, if it's still early in the game, you can be Chayzer. Okay, one more Mishnah, and a piece of Gemara. Ve'eluhin ha'psulin. The following individuals are considered pasul, unqualified to be present at a din Torah, to judge a case, to be a dayan, and also to offer testimony, to be an aid. For different reasons. The common denominator here is that they're all guilty of, you know, monetary violations. Rashi brings a pasuk, Al tashes rasha e, don't allow a rasha. And here we're speaking about, you know, monetary dishonesty. They're guilty of violating halachis for profit. And that applies to an aid, he's disqualified to offer testimony. Rashi says, v'kol shekein dayan, certainly to judge a case, which has higher standards. The dayan has to be right, perfectly partial and fair and honest. Ve'elon apsul, the following individuals are pasul to be edim and to be dayanim because of their misdeeds. Hamasachi bekuvi, a person who's a gambler, plays around with these cubes or whatever, some sort of a gambling game. He lends with interest. He has these pigeon races, also a form of gambling. He deals with produce grown on Shemitah. It's meant for personal consumption, not meant for commercial use. So there are violations which relate to profit, right? And therefore, they're disqualified from participating in a din Torah. In the old days, they would call them Shvius food collectors. So meaning, even those who collect large amounts of Shvius fruit for themselves, that's a problem. They're considered pusillators. So even in moderation is a problem. But Misha Rabu HaNosin, but after the king got really serious and imposed really very difficult excessive taxes, and that compelled them to collect a lot of produce to be able to pay up their taxes. So they're no longer guilty of violating halacha, and they're not possible edus if they collect, you know, large amounts of fruit, as long as they're not engaging in commercial activity with those fruit. Chazru the Kroisan Secher Yishvius. They switched the title to Secher Yishvius, meaning only a Secher Yishvius is considered possible edus. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Imasai. Rabbi Yehuda adds another twist to the whole Mishnah. When do we say these individuals, the gamblers we're talking about, those who engage in racing and gambling, are postulators. A masa bizman shehin lem umnus elohu. He takes on a different approach. It's not because of monetary dishonesty or forms of stealing. The problem is that, you know, a person who engages in this type of lifestyle is not somebody who understands It's not part of the, you know, social fabric. Okay, it's not a part of the community. He's not, his life doesn't conform to, you know, your typical lifestyle. So, this fellow, Rashi says, it's not Baki, but Tivdin. He doesn't really have a true understanding, a true appreciation for, you know, civil and proper social interaction. Doesn't understand din and maso matan ve'ena yirei chet. Rashi says he's lacking in Yerushalayim. He's a partier. So this fellow has no other profession. Bizman shehin lam umnus elahu. Ein lam umnus elahu means this is his only occupation. Then it's a problem. Aval yesh lam umnus shlo yivur. If he has a day job aside from this activity, then he's okay. Then he's sharing because he's considered one of the he's somewhat familiar and he can be considered a member of the a standing member of the community. Okay, mesachi bekuvi ma'ika avi. What's wrong with a mesachi bekuvi? I mean, showing they're gambling. Okay, but they're handing over the money willingly. Amar Rami Bar Chama. Mishnah Hava Asmachta. It's a classic Asmachta. Asmachta is lashon of semech. When a person pays out, when he loses his gambling game, it's not because he wants to pay it out. He figured he'll win. So he's not truly giving it wholeheartedly. So it's like a form of stealing with the Rabbanim. We treat it like he's stealing. The one who accepts that payment is stealing. It's not considered a true Kenyan. Rav Sheshes Amari disagrees. Kol ki agavna, this type of payment, lava smachta, it's not really an asmachta. Why? It says Rashi, I'll tell you why. What's your classic case of asmachta? A sharecropper. He says, look, if I fail to do my job, I don't, you know, develop your property this year, I'll pay you, you know, I'll compensate you for your losses. Top rate. Pay you top rate. Okay, so there, yeah, you know, he was hoping not to have to come to that payment, right? Or he says, look, if I don't pay you back the full loan by this and this day, you know, I'll pay you extra. So in all these cases, he was hoping to pay it off. He was hoping to do his job. And the initial promise was just that. It was just a promise, just a way to assure his opponent, assure the other party that he's going to keep his deal, going to keep his word. He wasn't really meaning to pay that money. It was an exaggerated promise, so to speak, to put him at ease, to allay his fears. But here, it's not so. He's engaging in gambling. He knows it's not up to him. Results are not in his hands. He has no clue what's going to happen. He's taking a chance. Right? So he's willingly taking a chance. That's not a gamble. I mean, it's a gamble. That's not a smachta. It's a proper commitment. Gamar or makni. It's not gzela. That's Rav Sheshes' opinion. And therefore, he says, the problem is not because of gezel. Elul v'shein asukin v'yishuv v'shalaylam. He's not one of the community. He's an outcast, engaged in this type of activity, doesn't understand, he's not sensitive to human experience and human hardships. That's his opinion in the Mishnah. I've been asked, what's the difference if it's because of this, because of that? Either way, he's possible. It could be not a difference like this. If he has another job, he's an upstanding member of the community, but he engages in gambling on the side. If gambling isn't a gezel issue, then he's possible. But if it's a matter of, you know, his lifestyle, well, primarily he has a good job. He's running a regular lifestyle, so it's okay. The Gamar Umsachriti has another profession. Now let's take a look at the Mishnah. Tanan, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda really made this point in the Mishnah, right? Until now we're going with the Tanakama. Now, according to Rav Sheshes, Tanakama has this approach. It's not a matter of gezel, it's a matter of lifestyle. But in the Mishnah, it sounds like it's Rabbi Yehuda's angle, not the Tanakam. When is this fellow possible? The gamble is only problematic. This is their only profession. If they have other professions, then they're okay. So the other way around, it seems from Rabbi Yehuda, who seems to be explaining the Mishnah, because he says, he's just elaborating on the Tanakam. He's not disputing the Tanakam, he's explaining. It's a matter of errant lifestyle. Right? He's not engaged in community building. He's not part of the tzibur. Kashi, Leron Barchama. So this seems to contradict Ron Barchama's approach that it's a matter of dishonesty and gesel. B'chitema perhaps will say, Pligi Rabbanu like Rabbi Yehuda, that really Rabbi Yehuda is voicing his own opinion. The Rabbanu, however, disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda. They're working with a gesel issue. That can't be, because Rabbi Yehuda prefaced his statement by saying, Emasa, I'm just explaining to you. I'm just elaborating on the previous piece of the Mishnah. Whenever you find these words prefacing Rabbi Yehuda's response, Emasa, when is that so? Only such and such. How is this implemented? He's just trying to explain the Chachamim who preceded him. Rabbi Yechon Amar Emasai is really Lafarish, it's explaining. Ubameh Lachlek. The word Bameh is offering an opposing view. But either way, all agree that Ukuli Alma Emasai, the word Emasai, which we have in our Mishnah, is in fact Lafarish. It was just explaining, elaborating previously stated position. So clearly, according to this approach, the whole Mishnah is based on an issue of errant lifestyle, lack of appreciation for human hardship. That's what disqualifies him. How could Rami Bar Chama tell us that it's a gezel issue, it's a monetary issue, gavra or gavra karamis? So you mean to put one man against the other, meaning Rishon Levi holds that a masai is just coming to explain the previous sheet, and there really is no disagreement in the Mishnah, it's all about errant lifestyle, whereas Rami Bar Chama learns no. Although Rabbi Yehuda begins his words by a masai, it's not an elaboration, it's his personal opinion, which disputes the Chachamim, who are based on Gezel. And even if he has another job, it doesn't matter. In fact, he's engaged in the monetary dishonesty. Mar Savar Pligi, right? Rambam Chacham holds, this is a machlokes in the Mishnah, and Rambam Chacham's explanation that it's a Gezel issue reflects the Chachamim's opinion. Mar Savar Pligi, whereas Rav Shmuel goes, there's no machlokes. Le Pligi, really, there's no machlokes? Now we're going to ask on Rav Shmuel Levi, who says that there is no machlekes here. It's all about unconventional activities, errant lifestyles, le pligi, v'atanya. We have a braisa, which begins with a different type of shita. Bein sheyesh lo umnos, bein shelayu, whether he has another job aside from gambling, bein shein lo umnos elu, whether this is his only profession, his only occupation, harei apostle, he's apostle. So in the case where he has another job, clearly it's not a question of lifestyle, it's not a question of community involvement. Rather, because gambling per se is a problem, it's a gezel issue. So clearly there's another shita. Answer to why you're right. In that price, we have another shita. He, Rabbi Yehuda, Mishur, Rabbi Tarfani. You're right. That's a new shita. Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rabbi Tarfani, as we find in Maseches Nazir. The Sanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Mishur, Rabbi Tarfani. Lo'ilam ein echad mehem nazir. So Rashi explains, what happened was there were two people sitting. They noticed a fellow walking by. So Reuben says, well, I'm telling you, that fellow is a nazir. And Shimon says, no, he's not a nazir. And Reuben says, well, I'm a nazir if he's a nazir. The other one says, well, I'm a nazir if the other fellow is right. And they're going back and forth. Turns out one of them is right. So Reuben Tavern says, nobody's a nazir. You know why? Because it was presented with a degree of uncertainty. They're taking a gamble, right? He didn't know what was going on. He sort of took a chance. If you're right, then I'm a nazir. If I'm right, whatever they said, it was conditioned upon something which wasn't unknown at the time. Right? I'm telling you, he's a nazir. If I'm right, I'm going to be a nazir. No, I'm telling you, he's not a nazir. If I'm right, I'm going to be, right? Nobody knew what was going on, just a guess. And the pasuk says, kiyafli. You have to express that Nazir's commitment with clarity, with certainty. That's Rabbi Tarfon's shita. And Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rabbi Tarfon, that none of them, Rabbi Yehuda Yimushon Rabbi Tarfon, lo'ilam ein echad mehem nazir, none of these individuals become a nazir. There's no commitment, because there was a degree of uncertainty here. Lifi shilai nitna Nazirus, the only way to commit to Nazirus is only ela lahaflo, when you express it with clarity. When, you know, as you're saying it, you know that's expressing commitment. Not just, you know, words with an unknown value. So how does that connect to our Gemara? How does that connect to a gambler being puzzled? This is what Rashi explains. Apparently, according to this approach of Rav Tarfon, even if you present something contingent upon a condition which is not in your hands, which you have no clue about, don't say, well, it's a full commitment. That was the thinking we had before. Gambling is not a false promise. It's an absolute commitment. It's a gamble. He's having fun, right? No, Reb Tafrin disagrees with that. He says, it's not a true commitment. It doesn't become a nazir. It's not a proper kinyan. It's not a true, wholehearted payment in terms of gambling. And therefore, taking that money is not right. And if you do so, you're pusillatus. So certainly there is such an opinion. But the question is, regarding our Mishnah, is that opinion reflected in our Mishnah as well? According to Rabbi Yehuda, for sure not. It's only a matter of lifestyle. If you have another profession, you're okay, you're safe. Is there a Tanakhama that disagrees? Well, that was given to interpretation. There are two approaches in the Mishnah. Okay, so in a nutshell, we have a whole discussion regarding how the Chachamim related to each other. Eretz Yisrael had one style, a soft-spoken style, and Bavel was more contentious and a matter of, debate. He spoke about Gasas HaRuach being found amongst Anius, right? Lack of Chachma is replaced by haughtiness. A person who is really a Chacham, stays humble, doesn't resort to false, presentations. We had the Mishnah where he's accepting a father or a Raye Bakar or all kinds of minimal Shavua expressions, and he seems to be good with that until he decides he's not good. Rav Meir says you can be Chayze, Rabbanan say you can't. But a question whether this Machlekes pertains to a case where he promised to pay or even a case where he's promising to forego his claim. Is it before Gemara Din or after Gemara Din? And we discuss several individuals who are considered pasul eidos for various reasons. All the best to you, Hatzlacha.